You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
It is time for a monthly update from the Concordia University system. We'll talk with President Hardy and Vice President Spatel in just a moment. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul by visiting csp.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy, President of the Concordia University system. Dr. Hardy, welcome back.
It's always a pleasure.
Also joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Douglas Spatel, Vice President of the Concordia University System. Welcome back.
Good morning.
So it is time for our monthly check-in to get an update on the Concordia University System, including our Concordia University campuses and all the good things that happen there. An update for us for this month, for the month of October.
Yeah, it's, school has started. All five of our Concordias are back at it. All five Concordias start at different times. And so, for instance, yesterday we had the IAC, that's the Institution Advisory Council. That's the president, CUS. We meet together. And Brian Friedrich was telling us that he has started his second week, whereas I was out at the opening service for Concordia Irvine, and that was the second week of August that they started. So they vary in start times. But the good news is this: three of our five Concordias report increased enrollment this year. The other two Concordias report stable or slight increases. But the really good news is that we see an increase in church work at almost every Concordia. That is just great news. Last year, we had an enrollment number of church workers of 802, and this year we have 846. We're climbing closer to my goal of 1,000, so that's a good thing. So that's good. Each of our Concordias have various different things going on that are good. We have some new programs at some of our Concordias. We're working on some different offerings. St. Paul has their satellite campus out in Denver, and then the nursing school out in Portland, Oregon. And so things are going really well there. And we continue to have conversations about micro campuses with our district presidents and with our Concordias. And so, yeah, it's very, very positive. Yesterday's meeting with the IAC, I didn't hear a single concern. There wasn't a single concern by the presidents. They all five had different good newses to tell. So when you get that kind of a report, it's a good day. It's a good day in CUS.
Absolutely. How does that, the increase in church workers, students, how does that start to shift the culture on campus when you're intentionally trying to have more church work students? We're seeing the fruit of that work now. How is that changing the vibes on campus as you guys are visiting?
First of all, it's important to remember that even though we have a lot of students who are studying for a lot of different vocations, both in the church and outside of the church, the core purpose of our Concordia universities as universities of the church is to train church workers. And I point that out because the way we have historically trained and formed and raised up our church workers, that template, if you will, is what we apply to the education and training of all these other vocations. So even if you're going to Concordia to learn to be an engineer, which is a great vocation in the world, you're going to get a Concordia education, which is going to be biblically based. You're going to get religion courses, Bible courses, and you're going to be in the context of a Concordia and of the life of that community that is based around our belief, our Lutheran belief in Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. So to say, how does having more church workers change things? It doesn't really change the culture. Obviously, you're going to have more church work students there, and they're going to have a certain joie de vivre for the church,
French?
If it will. I just had a French family visit my parish.
It's a vibe in French.
But it brings, I'd say, more of that to the campus, but to a campus that's already based in this idea of this is how all of us study for and prepare for our vocations, whether they're in the church or in the world.
So both of you have been to Concordia campuses. You visited, you learned a lot about the programs at the Concordias. Hypothetically, let's say you were going to college for the first time.
Boy.
This is going to be
not
good.
You, Andy.
Then. Not me. Not me. You.
Not me.
What programs would you be checking out? You're not pastors. You're checking out Concordias. What program or programs would you be checking out? this time around?
Yeah, for me, it would probably be back to my roots. I would probably end up at a Concordia, Nebraska to wrestle and probably study business. But that's partly because of my love today. Back in the day, I was teacher ed. So, I mean, you know, but there's a lot of offerings. I mean, the music programs at all of our Concordias are really good, specifically at Nebraska and Concordia Irvine. They have recording studios and facilities that were donated by the same family that they're world class. When I say world class, the recording studio at Irvine is the same one that Jay-Z has, the pop star Jay-Z. So, I mean, if you're into that kind of thing, but me, I'd probably be business and wrestle at Concordia, Nebraska or Wisconsin. They both have wrestling. So I could go back to my alma mater.
But what I hear you saying is you really want to spend time in the recording studio recording
an
album.
Now, today
oh,
I do.
Oh boy.
Yeah, today. I don't know about an album. I don't know about an album, but yeah, just talking.
All right. You've had some time to think.
It's a little tougher question for me because I went straight from high school to college looking to study for the ministry. Mm-hmm. But if I was looking, you know, let's take that off the table right now. If I was looking, I mean, my mom always wanted me to be a doctor when I was a little boy. So in the healthcare profession, I mean, we have very strong healthcare profession vocations at our Concordias. Concordia St. Paul with its nursing programs and a very, very active and strong kinesiology department. Even I might end up back at my alma mater, Concordia Ann Arbor, where they still have a strong healthcare program that just received a 10-year accreditation. And in the academic world, 10 years is a big deal.
It's the biggest.
So I think I'd probably be looking at our Concordias for their healthcare options.
And, you know, there's conversation for adding a DO, Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine, which we don't have right now in any of our Concordias. One of the things that I hope our Concordias are looking at, Portland had, which is a law school. Now, you know, the Concordia Ann Arbor campus, the North Campus, was a former University of Michigan law school. So they still have the mock court trial room that they've left there, which when I'm on campus, I tend to like going in there and pretending like I'm Johnny Cochran. But, you know, nonetheless, you know, those are the kind of things that most people don't know, right? I mean, you don't know that we have a courtroom at a Concordia that you could actually go in there and practice.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Can I ask you the same question, Andy?
No.
Okay. Moving on.
Because we'd be here all day.
Yeah.
I have briefly looked at the kinesiology program, which you probably have. Have you looked at it too?
No. Well, I already have a degree in exercise science.
They have a master's degree in kinesiology.
Oh, I don't need a master's in that. No. I would look at the liturgical art degree at Concordia, Nebraska. Yeah. But anyway, it's not
so
about
many options.
So many options.
So many options. They really are.
Let's all go back to school. Speaking of going back to school, going to a Concordia requires paying for it somehow. Let's talk about how these programs are funded. That funding comes from somewhere.
Yeah. You know, historically, back in the day, as they would say, the Synod was a very high and strong contributor to the actual bottom line budgets of our Concordias.
And this is when the Concordias were strictly church work
students. Mm-hmm. To be very frank with you, I think back then it was the only way they could do it. But today, things have changed drastically. I mean, if a university does not have federal student loans, it's almost impossible for them to exist unless they have about $1 billion or more in an endowment. That's about the only way you can do it without federal money supporting you. In our case, the CUS has historically had many people give to scholarships and endowments, roughly 19 or 20 of those. I think it's pretty cool, maybe more than that. But we have all these individual scholarships naming people, and specifically for music preparation, for church work, for pre-seminary, for teacher ed, for deaconess, for, you know, very specific things, even like those who want to go into Black ministry or Hispanic ministry, those with special needs. We have very specific scholarships. So we fund now, under the current CUS, we fund those scholarships. Simultaneously, we have a group of monies that were collected back when the For the Sake of the Church campaign went on. And that money is set aside for institutional support. And we'll be actually this afternoon be doing our distribution for this fiscal year for our universities. And so from the CUS funding perspective, we try very hard to contribute to that. But the funding of a university is on the backs of the students and on grants and aids that they get. And I want to say this, it's very important for the listeners to understand that the Synod, the corporate Synod, LCMS corporate Synod, supports fully CUS. And so by us supporting the universities, while it's not the numbers it used to be, it was very significant in the past. LCMS corporate is a direct sponsor of the work that goes on at our Concordias financially. And I really want that emphasized to people. I think they've gotten away from understanding. Yes, one could argue that it's not financially where it should be numerically, but this criticism that the Synod doesn't fund, it's not true. They do. They fund us, and they fund through the scholarships. They hold a very large portion of endowment monies, too, that come to us. And so finances are always the biggest issue, right? It's the biggest issue in higher ed is finance and how do we pay for it, and it continues to escalate. But I want you to know that I've heard from many students, that especially church work students, that the Concordias have made it affordable. Affordable. And that's a very important thing. With our $5,000 scholarship for students, not only has it been affordable, I think last episode Douglas shared with you, we had a student tell us that they weren't going to enroll in the fall, but when they got this scholarship from CUS, it made it possible for them to enroll in the fall. So these are the kind of things that we look for, and we're just thankful to God. And we hope that the folks listening understand that we need that continual support also. It's not a one-off kind of thing. We give thanks for the folks previously who had set up our endowments and what we have today.
Yeah, we've received some very nice thank you cards from some of our scholarship recipients, especially I got a group card signed by a number of our church work students at Concordia University of Chicago, thanking us and making it possible for them to continue their studies. We were able to give out 120 scholarships this year, $600,000 in scholarships, which is wonderful. We want to continue, and we want to do more. President Hardy and Synod President Harrison have both said we want 1,000 church work students in our system in the next couple of years. And on top of that, at CUS, we want to be able to give scholarships to 1,000 students. But to do that, we need our listeners' help. We need the help of the people of the church to support the students at our church universities. So, how do you get from 120 scholarships to 1,000? Well, there's a basic number that we need. You take your $5,000 scholarship, multiply it by 1,000, and multiply that by 20, and that tells you how much money you need.
That's too much math for me, Douglas.
Well, then, Dr. Hardy, why don't you tell them how much money we need?
$80
million. Yes, we need $80 million on top of what we already have to get us up around $100 million so that we will be able to just and never touch the principal. We have a policy that we never, ever touch the principal. You donate money into that endowment scholarship fund, it stays there and just keeps working perpetually. But off the earnings of that pot of money, we're able to fund our students. So, but we need help getting there because I don't have a money tree in the backyard. And I don't think Dr. Hardy
does. I think you should plant one, though. That's what I've been telling you that for years.
Have to invent it and then plant it, yeah.
We're getting an update on Concordia University system today. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Today we're talking with Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy and the Reverend Dr. Douglas Patel of the Concordia University System. Before we went to break, we were talking about the scholarships available for students attending Concordia universities and the work to build up that fund so that we would continue to have support for students who are attending Concordia universities. Let's go back to, you shared that you had received some responses from students who had received scholarships this year. What does that cycle look like for applying for scholarships? How do students apply for scholarships? When's the next opportunity?
Okay, so well, this year was the first time we'd ever done it. And so this year, Our online portal for applications opened up on June the 16th, and it closed on July the 31st. And it's a very simple online application. You fill it out. It automatically sends an email to the student's pastor, who also has to fill out to simply recommend and say, yes, this is a student is one of our students. And then that all comes into the system. It's time-stamped. It's very automatic. It's got labels for me to work with, and it can generate reports and generate who receives the scholarships very, very quickly. So I was actually, when the window closed on July 1st, we awarded the scholarships on August 1st. Next year, we hope to do that a little earlier. June 16th was a little late, only because of getting things set up. We'd like to get it somewhere in probably May or no later than June 1st. But all you have to do is watch cus.edu. There's a button for scholarships there. And when it goes live, it'll say it's live. And also the Concordia universities themselves make this information known to their students, both the existing students and the incoming freshmen get an email or something saying, hey, this is available for you. You know, go out and go get it.
You know, we learn lessons, right? Every time you do something, you learn lessons. The first time we did this, what we learned was it was too late in the academic year. The students were starting. The money wasn't there yet. And so we're going to back this all up. And so students will be notified that this will be up and available probably April and May leading up to the opening of it. And so returning students will be notified a month or two before they even come to campus. And, you know, this is a heavy burden on us because we feel compelled that this is our calling to help defer the cost for students. Now, I want to be very clear with people. You still need to have a stake in the game. You know, this idea of free, I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. When I went to St. Paul the first time, you know, they announced their church worker guarantee. And I was at lunch with a student, and I just asked the five students, I said, why are you here at CSP? Well, don't you know that we have free tuition for church workers? And I said, you see that kid over there in line getting a pizza? Is he a church worker? No. He's paying to help you come for free. Nothing's free. And so the idea is our universities are making decisions using their endowments, using good business principles to make it more cost affordable for our church workers. So, you know, we're doing everything we can to set the tone. God willing, we can do this every year. But the truth of the matter is we're only going to give out the money that we have. And there could be some years where we don't have money to give out. And so that's why our scholarships are simply for 1 year. They're not an ongoing four-year package. And we've had tremendous, tremendous feedback from district presidents, from students, from parents, and from our university folks. It's been
another aspect besides getting the thank you cards and the emails. I was at Concordia University in Chicago, Concordia University, Wisconsin for their opening services. And I got to sit and just talk at lunchtime. I'm the old guy who shows up to a table that has an empty seat and says, may I sit here? And, you know, and I sit down. And I get to talk. And in Chicago, I was sitting with two freshmen and a transfer sophomore. So three students who are new to that university. And we had a wonderful conversation. And as it turned out, they were all church work students. Whereas with Wisconsin, the guys I sat down with there, they were varieties. They were some teacher ed church work students, and they were some other vocations outside of the church. But had a great conversation in both places. The students are just appreciative, first of all, of the education that they're receiving in the community that we call Concordia. And then on top of that, the students who have received scholarships from us, they're very thankful for the scholarships that help them be able to go to school.
What have you guys learned from the students as you've visited them now for prior to this school year? What have you learned from them that informs your process, informs how you want to move forward with all of the work that you're doing to support them? What have you learned from these students?
Well, I'm continually amazed at how connected the students are to the life of the campuses. And it varies on our campuses. Let's just be clear. It varies. You go to Concordia, Nebraska, and their chapel, which is the smallest of all of our chapels physically, is bursting out at the seams. Bernard reported to us yesterday that they had 25 students on Wednesday last week for the communion service standing out in the hall, that it was no room for standing room inside or seats. inside. Of course, Concordia, Wisconsin, my alma mater, has the best chapel on the planet. And they could probably do about 1,000 people standing room only in there. So it's a different dynamic, as you know. You know, Chicago's chapel, along with Irvine's chapel, is very nice sized. And, you know, I'm sorry, with St. Paul's chapel is very nice sized. Chicago's got a very nice sized chapel as well. And so when you start seeing the life of Concordia and the students, how many kids go to chapel every day, you know, that varies. But the life of a Concordia, it's amazing, because you talk to these kids time and time again, and they just talk about their teachers, administrators, lunch people. We've gone back and forth to Chicago a number of times, and there's a man that serves the pizza line at Irvine on our formal visitation. We were there for 3 days. This guy engaged, and he's not even Lutheran, and he just works there, but it's a family. A CUI keeps this as a family. And it was just so amazing to listen to this guy talk about the Concordia way at CUI, and he's not even Lutheran. I mean, it was awesome. It was just awesome.
And one of the things we're learning from all this about the importance of and the centrality of community, of praying together, dining together, of being in that community, is spurring us to look at placing what we're calling micro campuses, smaller campuses, in areas of the United States where we don't have one. So the South, the East, maybe the Northwest, even in the Midwest, you'd think, well, you've got schools in the Midwest. Well, not here.
I want one in Alaska.
Well, okay. You can do that.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of snow. But to have these small campuses, these would be church work.
Yeah, church work only.
Dedicated campuses, but for small cohorts of about 24 in the freshman year, 24 the sophomore year, who would live and pray and study together for their freshman, sophomore years, and then for their junior, senior year, go to the mothership, whichever university, whichever Concordia is accrediting them, to finish up their church work degree. Because we want that Concordia experience for more and more students, and we are going to work to bring it to them.
You mentioned meeting regularly with the Concordia University campus presidents.
Sure.
The LCMS is made up of 35 districts. How often do you get to interact with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod district presidents? What's your relationship to district presidents?
Well, you know, I'm a recovering district president, so we intentionally plan our time in St. Louis around the district president's meetings, so that we're here. The important part that I want folks to know is we don't do anything without a district president, meaning I value the district president's ecclesiastical authority in that place. So it's not just the guys at Wisconsin, South Wisconsin, Northern Illinois, Minnesota South, Nebraska, and Southern California. It's all of our district presidents who care about our Concordias and who promote church work in their districts, who promote students from the districts. I won't mention specific district names other than the greatest district English, of which I was bishop for a while. Some districts do a much better job at doing scholarshiping for their own students. I know one district in particular, not English, unfortunately, that provides full scholarshiping for church work students out of their district. So if you go to a Concordia and it costs 10 grand, you get it from your district. So this is an important thing. And so we try to keep good, solid lines of communication open with the district presidents. I meet with as many of them as possible. I probably had personal meetings with 20 of the 35 while I was here this week. It's really an important endeavor to stay connected to these guys, because they are the highest ecclesiastical officers. And they are the ones, by the way, that are coming to us about the regional micro campuses. We're not shoving that down people's throats or bringing this up. This came to us by district presidents who said, we have kids in our district that won't go to Concordia. We need you to help us figure out how to get these kids in. So we work really hard. For instance, in November of the last couple of years, the Council of Presidents has met with the presidents of our universities and CUS. That will happen this year at St. Paul. I'm looking forward to that. It's a very lively conversation when we get together. In fact, I had many of my brother district presidents stop me and ask me, am I going to address the council this time? And I said, they only allow me to do that once a year. So we try to do it personally, you know.
Where can we find more information about what's happening now and upcoming for CUS?
Well, our website, cus.edu. But when you go there, up in the header, you'll see a link for our newsletter. Click on that, subscribe to the newsletter. It's a low volume, once a month. But there's always articles in there from each of our universities and a little bit of the goings on with the CUS staff.
Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Douglas Patel, Vice President, Concordia University System. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be with you guys.
And the Reverend Dr. Jameson Hardy, President of the Concordia University System. Thanks for being our guest.
I love KFUO.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Gilseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.